always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
You can bring your Kia here to the Busch Stadium lot today and tomorrow from 8 a.m. until 6 p.m. to get the anti-theft software installed. Then on Sunday, crews will be installing the software upgrades out at the Chesterfield Mall from 8 a.m. until 3 p.m. No appointments are needed and the upgrades are free. Kia has been doing this work in cities across the country. After the work is done, crews are going to put a little decal on your windshield, hopefully to help discourage any future criminal activity.
And welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, Friday's edition here, April 26, 2024, 5:06 in the p.m. Tim Jones, Chris Arp's producer, Joey V. Well, there you go, Chris. That'll solve all the crime in the city of St. Louis once we upgrade the Kias.
Tim, I'm wondering, is Kia doing this out of the goodness of their corporate hearts, or is it because they're afraid of being sued by cities because their cars are so easy to steal? Which do you think?
Well, based on what Tashara Jones has announced recently, I think the latter. I think you hit the nail on the head there. We're going to talk about a lot of economic news at 5:25 with Dr. Aaron Hedlund. Chris, the GDP numbers this week were abysmal. You know, we keep being told that, well, they don't use the word anymore. We were being told about 6 months ago that Bidenomics was working. Everything was great. Happy days are here again. We've had a succession of horrible economic reports. Bidenflation came roaring back in March. The GDP numbers last week were reported at an anemic 1.6%. Barack Obama told us back during his reign that, well, that was just the new normal. Well, I guess maybe he was right.
And that's a pretty big revision. I mean, the original number was 3%, and it's been revised down to 1.6%. Usually, numbers are revised up a little or a little down every quarter. You don't ever see a 3.0 going down to 1.6. That's a huge drop.
Doesn't it make you wonder who's cooking the books over there on the front end? Yeah. Like, how do they get it so wrong? And you're right, there have been so many revisions. I think everything's been revised, like you said, either a little up or a little down. Generally, under the last 3 years, they've been revised down. Yeah. but never dramatically.
Not like this.
This is a dramatic revision. We'll have to ask Dr. Hedlund, how does that happen? How do they miss so badly when really you just got to count beans, right? I don't know what happens that they miss by that much. Did they forget to carry a one or something? We'll talk to Dr. Aaron Hedlund about that. The inflationary numbers that are just so stubborn and not going away. Gas back up near $4 in most of the country. I think we're hovering on an average here in the Midwest around $3.50, $3.60 for just regular unleaded gas. So not good news for the Biden administration. Chris, I saw a Gallup headline today. Gallup, Biden approval lower than any other president in recent history at this point in their presidency.
And Tim, you know, I mean, this is the famous Tony Colombo flip test. But you know, if this was Donald Trump and he had the lowest ratings of his presidency, we would be hearing this night after night, day after day, week after week. All we hear about this is maybe every week and a half when a new poll comes out, of course. But they never talk about how bad this is for an incumbent president to be this terrible in the polls. And if this was a Republican president, they'd be comparing it to the previous president, where he was at in the polls at this time. We see none of that.
You're right. Because look, the online outfits, they have to report it, because if they didn't, they would get lambasted. Because, you know, Fox News, Newsmax, and all of the other center-right outlets, they would report the headlines, and then these folks like The Hill and Yahoo News, they would look stupid. So they are reporting it, but you're right, they're going to report it, and then they're going to move on, yeah. Right? They're going to put the headline out there, and then they're not going to promote it. They're not going to say, oh, we have a guest to speak about that. You know, you're not going to hear about it on any of the alphabet soup networks throughout the weekend. But look at this headline from The Hill. Biden approval rating mired at historic low. So they're starting to use adjectives to describe these polls. And So they're doing that, but like you said, there's not a constant drumbeat that would be there if Donald Trump was in the
race.
And,
you know, I think when his poll numbers did rise after the State of the Union, I think that was a part of it. You know, seeing the president not looking like he's about to fall asleep during prime time gave some people some pep. But I think one thing, too, Tim, and I've talked about this many, many times here on the show, is President Biden has been a president that does not leave the White House. During the weekends, he goes home to Rehoboth Beach, his beach house, or he goes to his regular home. When he was doing campaign trips, they were day trips where he really wasn't traveling all that far. But if you remember, after the State of the Union, they put him out on the road to these different cities to campaign, talking about his accomplishments. The people seeing him, pressing the flesh, even if he did look, you know, decrepit most of the time, but he was out there. He was out there among the people, and I think that was a part of the reason, besides the State of the Union address, why his numbers are creeping up a little bit.
Yeah, and the problem is now he looks like Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just, I know you've seen some of the recent clips. He's literally mumbling through cue cards.
Yeah.
Like, in the past, he would mumble when he was trying to improvise or like read off script. Now they literally have cue cards in front of him, and he's mumbling through the cue cards. This is not, I mean, look, all kidding aside and jokes and us making fun of him and wanting Trump in the White House instead of him. Chris, I feel very uneasy as an American citizen right now with Joe Biden in the White House. It makes me extremely nervous on a day-to-day basis.
It is, and it's not so much that, you know, he's not capable of the job and doesn't have all the faculties. That's important, of course. But the thing that bothers me is who in the hell is running this White House? That's what we don't know. You know, who is it? Susan Rice? Is it Obama? Who has the president's ear? Who is the one that's really running the White House? That bothers me more than occasional gaffes and slip-ups and the signs of dementia. Mm-hmm. Who's really pulling the strings?
I completely agree with you. It's terrifying indeed. You know, folks, the people who are supposed to be pulling the strings here in the state of Missouri over the last 20 years have been the Republican now supermajority. And we wonder why then has our budget ballooned so high. Look, I'm glad that Republicans are in charge and not Democrats. We saw several examples of that this week when we heard some of the things that the Democrats would do. I was up in Jeff City. I heard some of the debate on the House and Senate floor. And folks, let me tell you, as bad as Republicans might be and as much as we criticize them, Democrats would be destructive on our state. They would have abortion on demand. Forget about your Second Amendment rights. Taxes would be through the roof. They're just insane individuals. But many of us are wondering, you know, how come Republicans haven't been as Republican as they could have been? I'm going to talk about that in a second in today's speaker stump speech. But Chris, we'll then segue into Dr. Aaron Hedlund, chief economist at the Show Me Institute. We'll talk about a lot of these issues you and I just discussed around the Biden presidency, rising inflation, extremely anemic or lacking GDP growth and more. I mean, Chris, as we get ever closer to the election, I know that Democrats are going to try to push abortion front and center.
Oh, most definitely.
But if the economy continues to crater like it is, if gas is still near $4 a gallon, if people are feeling the horrible squeeze of inflation, that's probably what's going to be a front and center on most minds, I would imagine.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see which wins out because, you know, of course, abortion affects women, but also women are the ones that do, and I hope this doesn't sound chauvinist, but women are the ones that do the majority of the shopping in the household, and they know and see these prices every week and how they've gone up. It's going to make you wonder which is more important to me, my quote-unquote reproductive rights or putting food on the table for my family.
You wouldn't want to turn you and I loose in a grocery store.
No.
Probably better.
Dude,
than
no.
Yeah, it'd be a mess. Yeah. Be Pop-Tarts and soda pop.
It's so. Just, I just hate it because they're just too big and I don't know where anything is at. And you just,
when I go,
it's a pain.
When I go in, I've got like four things and I'm out. You know? Because you're right. The longer I'm there, the more anxious I get, you know? So.
But the thing now, because of the grocery stores, though, if you just want to pop in for two or three things and get out, it's hard to do that because you got to wait in line for 20 minutes, you know, in either self-checkout or the regular checkout. Mm-hmm. It's like, I could have just went to 7-Eleven or somewhere and got out quicker.
Good to see things busy, though. That's for sure.
Yeah,
people are back again. That's good. All right. Well, we're going to get Dr. Ernie Hedlund at 5:25. Until then, there. Consider this a little appetizer. One of the things we'll probably ask him about is, why is the Missouri budget under Republican leadership? Why is it so high? Why is it so bloated? What's the problems? That's going to be the subject of today's Speaker Stump Speech.
Listen to me, listen to me.
I'm very consistent. I'm a very stable genius.
It's time for the Speaker Stump Speech, sponsored by Hanson's Tree Service at hansonstree.com.
Thank you to Chad Hanson and the gang at Hanson's Tree Service. Hat tip to Brenda Talent, Chief Executive Officer of the Show Me Institute. This is from a little letter that they put out to family, friends, and fans, and so I'm on their mailing list. And this really piqued my interest because many reasons, because the Missouri budget has been approved by the House. They whacked $2 billion out of Governor Parsons' incredibly bloated budget. And wait till you hear these numbers. You're going to be shocked that these are budgets under Republicans. We're supposed to be the fiscal hawks. That budget's now in the Senate. The word is the Senate has put back all the House cuts. Why? I mean, we keep being told we're headed towards really fiscally challenging times. So from the letter of the Show Me Institute from Brenda Talent, she talks about the fact there's one area, however, in Missouri where we have not had consistent success. One area where Missouri government has, on the whole, resisted the advocacy of the Show Me Institute, and I'll say many other groups that have preached this, and been deaf to our urgings, the budget. As Milton Friedman was fond of reminding lawmakers, quote, the real problem is government spending. Missouri's government spending has been growing for years. It's now growing faster than the state's economy. Folks, that's under Republican, quote, leadership. Missouri spending, I'm repeating myself here, Missouri spending has been growing faster than the economy. That's not a sustainable path. That needs to change, Brenda says. We think it will change in the years ahead because Missouri's budget, as I just said, is on an unsustainable trajectory. Missouri's recent budget troubles began, as they often do, and as Chris Harps pointed out in our last segment, in Washington, D.C. 4 years ago, the last administration decided the COVID pandemic would lead to financial collapse unless the federal government injected a massive stimulus into the economy. Congress passed $2.2 trillion in new spending, was and still is the largest stimulus package ever enacted in our history. Then 3 years ago, despite the fact the economy was definitely coming out of the pandemic quite well, thank you very much, with a surge, the current administration passed the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, approximately another $2 trillion, and followed it up with another $900 billion bill, laughingly and hysterically called the Inflation Reduction Act. Nothing regarding inflation has been reduced to this present day. Let's see. Let me jump ahead just a little bit here. This was a classic case of too much money chasing too few goods. The American people are still paying the price. Yeah, aren't we all? At least anyone who likes to eat is paying the price. Food prices have risen extremely dramatically, along with many, many other items as well. 21% in the last 3 years. The combination of high house prices and the more than doubling of mortgage rates could make, and many would argue has made, homeownership unattainable for many. Folks at the Show Me Institute saw all the danger coming right away. The federal money would not last forever. The spending binge could be likened to burning money, and while the flame would burn brightly while it lasts, it would only last for a few years. If the states invested that money, as if the funding would continue indefinitely, if they spent to increase the size of ongoing programs, then when the money ran out, the states would be left with bloated budgets that would be unsupportable, even if the state revenue had, in the meantime, grown by a healthy margin. So, the folks at the Show Me Institute and many other fiscal think tanks suggested we trim things back. Instead, lawmakers in Jefferson City, under the Republican supermajority, have put our budget on steroids. Folks, get this. The state budget of Missouri, in the last 3 years, just in 3 years alone, has grown from $31 billion to $53 billion. In 2019, Missouri spent $8.5 billion in federal funds. This year, the fiscal year that we're wrapping up, 2024, that's ballooned from $8.5 billion to $24.8 billion, a threefold increase. It's expected to go up even higher in the 2024-2025 recommended budget. Over the last 3 years, the state's budget has grown by 72%, far outpacing our increases in prices, 18%, Missouri's economic output, 25%, and definitely population growth, which has been less than 1%. So, get this. We've gone from a $31 billion budget to a $53 billion budget, while our population has grown less than 1%. What's all the spending for? What's it doing? Who's it helping? It seems to me like it's simply encouraging more government welfare. Our Medicaid program alone is on a completely unsustainable path. And what are we getting for all of these services? Missouri is ranked as one of the highest states per capita of having too many state employees and a budget that funds too many services. Has your family's income gone up by 75% in the last 3 years? Are you taking home bonuses every year that would match such? Or are you finding it's really difficult to make ends meet at the grocery store and at the gas pump? Let's remember the old axiom. For every dollar that you take out of the private sector and put into government, that's less money for actual economic opportunity. It seems like the only thing growing these days in Missouri, it's not our population, it's not our economy, it's not our opportunity or our prosperity, it's an ever-engorging state government under Republican rule. Let's remember that in August when we all go to the polls. And that's the stump speech for today. You know, really, really amazing numbers.
Oh, it is. I remember when I first started getting involved in politics, the 2001, 2002, Sherman's first year in the legislature, I think the budget was $22 billion.
Yeah, it's over doubled then since then.
What do you do with all the money, though, Tim? I mean, you get all that extra money for COVID and you don't need all that money and services. Do you give it to the people? Do you send it back to the federal government? What should be done?
So the it's a long letter that Brenda wrote. I didn't have time to get on it. She said that Florida and Tennessee actually handled things a lot better. They put a lot of that spending, Chris, almost entirely in one-time projects. So it didn't get put into the recurring budget.
Right.
Unfortunately, in Missouri, they have put that into the recurring budget. And so then, Chris, you know how it is. If you don't increase something every year in government speak, then you're cutting it. You know, they should have done it one time and then it would have disappeared. You know,
where has
build a building, fix a road, you know, things like that.
Not to put you on the spot. Yeah. Where has the majority of this extra money gone in the budget, or has it been spread evenly across everything?
It's been spread across all the budget bills. I will tell you, Chris, that the budget folks tell me that Medicaid is skyrocketing every year. The Medicaid expansion, and they said if they don't reform the program, that's going to start outpacing everything else in our state. Yeah, very dangerous indeed.
And that's been an issue I've been hearing for 20 years.
Forever.
Medicaid, 35-40% of the budget.
Yeah, and a big chunk of the population. It's we should not be a welfare state here in the heartland, and we're turning into one. We're going to talk about all of these issues, expand upon them, and more with Dr. Aaron Hedlund. He's joining us next. He's chief economist at the Show Me Institute. More straight ahead on these economic uncertainties with him when the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show rolls on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
It was great to see the president come and engaging with the blue-collar worker of New York City. We basically built New York. The union movement has made the middle class. I put out a poll in my union. President Trump is leading Joe Biden 3-1 on my presidential poll out of my 9,000 members right now. We are very tired of the situation with groceries, inflation, gas prices, illegal immigration, crime. We're living it every day in New York City.
Well, if the world wasn't already an upside down enough place, how about the fact, Chris, that Steamfitters Local 6638 manager Bob Bartles, and Chris, this guy looks like he's right out of Central Casting. Mm-hmm. Like if you were going to make an old school, big tough union guy, it would be Bob Bartles, talking about the fact that his union members, according to him, are supporting Trump at a rate of 3 to one in New York City.
Does not surprise me at all. We saw that movement start on January 16th when Trump got a sizable portion of the union vote and continued to keep that vote throughout his presidency. It reminds me of what Ronald Reagan said, why he left the Democratic Party. He said, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me. And I think a lot of Democrats, especially blue-collar union Democrats, feel that same way.
Mm-hmm. I think that is definitely the sentiment these days. Let's talk about what's driving all of this economically with our next guest.
What is your financial situation?
All of our holdings are tied up in the railroads.
Yeah, Reading Railroad, B&O Railroad, Pennsylvania Railroad.
I won second prize in a beauty contest. That's $50 right there.
Are you guys just saying Monopoly stuff?
Yes. Dr. Aaron Hedlund himself joining us, chief economist at the Show Me Institute, showmeinstitute.org. Dr. Aaron Hedlund, what's driving, the elites, Dr. Hedlund, they don't feel this, right? But the working men and women of New York City sure do, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, the left has become a movement for urban elites, and it's disconnected from the material reality that the vast majority of people are facing. You know, and most people, thankfully, don't wake up and think about politics from morning to night. You know, I think politics is really interesting, but most people are just trying to put food on the table and advance their careers. And what they're living in right now is a cost of living crisis, and that's driving things.
Dr. Hedlund, we've been waiting all day to ask you this question. Quarterly GDP growth in the first quarter was 3.4%. It has been revised downward to 1.6%. You know, we're not economic folks like you and when watch this every single day like you do. But I've watched this enough to know that 3.4 to 1.6 is not a usual revision. Why such the drastic revision this quarter?
Well, I just think you're seeing the economy weaken, right? I mean, there was this talking point from last year that, oh, the economy is booming, everything's amazing. It was always a baloney talking point. I mean, the growth numbers from last year were respectably average, and they're treating that as if it was amazing. And they're, of course, missing the broader picture, which is this cost of living crisis where pay has been outstripped by prices. And they actually added more to the debt last year than we did in terms of new goods and services added. But what we're seeing now is that even that was unsustainable, right? It's driven by way too much debt on the consumer side, on the government side. And we're seeing the return of that ugly word, stagflation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dr. Hedlund, talk about how bad an economic, a GDP number like 1.6% is, right? Especially on the heels of multi-trillions of dollars of spending. So you've got all this massive spending, most of those dollars borrowed from folks who really aren't our friends, Communist China and others. So we can't, at 1.6%, we can't grow ourselves back into prosperity if it appears the economy is contracting, right?
Right, that's exactly the problem. And 1.6% is quite anemic. That is not anything to write home about. But it's made that much worse, like salt in the wound, because of how much debt we're taking out to even just get that paltry outcome. Now, this really shouldn't be surprising because you don't grow an economy by the government picking winners and losers and funneling a bunch of stuff into activist projects, which is really what the Inflation, quote unquote, Reduction Act was all about, which really should be the Inflation Creation Act.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're starting to see that. And the idea that the Fed is going to cut rates anytime soon is becoming more and more distant.
Dr. Hedlund, we are hearing from people that follow economic news very carefully. When they describe inflation, they say it is stubborn inflation. I know the Fed's rate is 2%. We are 3-4% now. We seem to be having trouble getting down to that 2%. Dumb it down for us. Why is inflation, quote unquote, stubborn in the economy right now?
I mean, the funny thing about that phrasing is it makes it sound like inflation has a personality. it doesn't. I mean, it's just kind of basic math. You've got too much money chasing too few goods. And what we've seen over the past few years is way too much artificial money injected into the economy, trillions of dollars of borrowed money. And at the same time, coming at it from the other angle, is regulatory excess and this kind of threat of tax hikes and going around the world and, you know, doing agreements with other countries to take away our sovereignty when it comes to setting tax rates, which constrains supply. So we've had way too much money entering the economy and too few goods. The combination is inevitably inflation. And until we have a change in policy, you're not going to get the relief that people really need.
So, Dr. Edlund, you've got an inflation report most recently that shows it is not slowing much. It kind of paused for a while, and now it's crept back upwards. You've got a GDP number that everybody was crowing about in the Biden administration until last week. Now it's been crickets. Can we say now over 3 years into the Biden administration that the economic record is not good? I'm trying to think of something they did correctly, but you tell me. I think it's been pretty much an F from beginning to end.
Yeah, it's been terrible. I mean, we've had a thousands of dollars drop in purchasing power. That should be the end of the case right there. Like, people's paychecks in terms of what they can actually buy has gone down. That almost never happens. Even if you were to look at weak economic records in the past, it would be very, very slow growth or stagnation. So we saw a lot of stagnation in the years after the financial crisis with all the, you know, all the stimulus and things that were going on there. But even in that situation, pay was basically flat. Here we've had it decline because of inflation. So that's a terrible record. And at the same time, the amount of debt to achieve that bad record, it's really terrible. And none of it's surprising. And it's not a partisan thing either, because you had Larry Summers, who is a, you know, well-known Harvard economist. He was the Treasury Secretary under President Clinton. He's actually the director of the National Economic Council under Obama. He, in early 2021, said this is the most reckless macroeconomic policy he had seen in 40 years.
Mm.
And what we've seen over the next 3 years was the worst macroeconomic outcomes that you could imagine. Mm-hmm. And again, predictable from someone who has no reason to be sympathetic with conservatives.
Speaking with Dr. Aaron Hedlund, chief economist at the Show Me Institute. Dr. Hedlund, the other day, the Federal Trade Commission issued a controversial ruling eliminating non-compete clauses. Are non-compete clauses good or bad for the economy?
Yeah, it's actually a nuanced issue. I'm still combing through that ruling, and my kind of prior instinct is there's so much regulatory excess, so I'm sure they probably went too far. But you know, on the one hand, you know, you do want to have a competitive labor market, and you know, non-competes can interfere with that. On the other hand, you also want companies to invest in their workers. So if they're investing in their workers, and workers can just take that knowledge and immediately go over to a competitor, and you kind of ban that, then you know, you're going to reduce investment of workers. So I think there's really kind of a sweet spot in the middle that you want to find, and I have very little faith that they've found that correct sweet spot.
Dr. Hedlund, I was speaking earlier about the Missouri budget, the state of Missouri's budget, which is not on much better footing than what we're seeing with the feds. Too much money chasing too few goods here in the Show Me State as well, under a Republican supermajority. And I was reading from a letter from the Show Me Institute, where there's a quote from you from January 2022. Don't worry. It's actually prophetic of what you said. You said in January of 2022, it's crucial that lawmakers be aware that misspent money today, even if it has the false appearance of being free, can saddle Missouri with fiscal obligations, a weaker economy, or both in the future. Because the funds, we're talking about the federal funds here we got from Joe Biden during the COVID era, are a one-time injection rather than a reliable stream of future revenue, Jefferson City must avoid engaging in spending that creates long-term future commitments. Dr. Hedlund, despite the best efforts of some of the more fiscally austere folks in the House, the Senate, under Senate Appropriations Chair Lincoln Huff, have done the opposite. And now, Dr. Hedlund, with a $52 billion budget and many fiscal concerns, we're seeing the chickens come home to roost here in Missouri, aren't we?
We are. I mean, what we face in this state, unfortunately, at the moment, is a leadership deficit. And I think everyone should pay more and more attention to what goes on in Jefferson City. I know that, you know, the national news obviously takes a lot of attention, and it's tempting for people to say, oh, well, you know, my political party won. Well, that oftentimes doesn't mean much of anything. Like, you really need people who have their principles in the right spot. And we're kind of rudderless right now in the state. There are good people there for sure, but not enough, and not enough in influential positions. And yeah, the state has done the easy thing, which is spend a bunch of money. Anyone can do that. The challenge is not spending it when you're not going to, you know, when there's not a stable revenue source, and thinking more in terms of a growth perspective.
Dr. Hedlund, last week, the major banks and some of the investment banks released some of their earnings. If I remember correctly, they didn't do too badly. But we're reading reports that regulators are thinking about seizing the Philadelphia Bank Republic First. How worried are you about this, and how much do you know about this situation?
So I'm not aware of that particular bank, but I do think the situation going on with that. But there are this commercial real estate issue is not going away. You've got a lot of office space that has higher than normal vacancies that are really overvalued. The values are going to go down a lot, and people don't want to realize those losses right away. But those losses are going to be realized, and interest rates are remaining high. I mean, that's the thing. All of this stuff is driven by inflation. Had inflation not been high, then interest rates wouldn't be high. Mm-hmm. And if interest rates weren't high, you wouldn't have a real estate crisis that's sort of slowly unfolding, which will affect the banks. So this is, it's really tragic that this is all artificially created.
Dr. Hedlund, KKR, the big leveraged buyout firm, is buying Blackstone's Real Estate Investment Trust. In this environment, what does that tell you?
Well, I think it's been interesting. You know, Blackstone has really engaged in a lot of purchases. They have thought that the single family rental market, they've bought up a lot of homes to rent out. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over time. It's traditionally difficult for large entities to manage a vast array of single family homes. It's just too bad we don't have more building. That's really what we need in the housing market right now, is we need more supply, more housing, because the homeownership dream has never been harder to achieve than ever. I mean, you can look at interest rates that were double digits in the early 1980s and think, oh, it was worse then. No, because prices were lower. Housing affordability overall is worse than it's ever been.
Aaron, in addition to all of the economic malpractice the Biden administration has committed on all of its spending and its budgetary mishaps, one of the other major policy areas that we've talked about often that have led to our economy being on such a precipice right now is the Biden administration's policies on the energy front and all of the central planning they're trying to do through these forced Green New Deal projects. Well, we're seeing that they're utter failures. The giant international car rental agency Hertz said Thursday that the rental car giant's failed investment in an electric vehicle fleet continues to be an extremely expensive mistake. They reported another $195 million lost in the last quarter. Dr. Hedlund, that's on top of previous losses, now totaling over $580 million, even greater than what Wall Street had expected. That sent shares tumbling down near 25% on Thursday. Dr. Hedlund, isn't this what happens when you put the central planners in charge of everything?
Absolutely. Most people, when they heard about Solyndra many years ago, that big boondoggle, they said, well, that's bad, let's not do that. But for some reason, the current leadership looked at that and went, well, that's amazing, that's a model, let's 100 times that. And they've been trying to create a market where a market doesn't exist. There's just simply not the sufficient consumer demand to move to all electric right now. And it's kind of obvious why that is. You know, people are concerned about costs. They're concerned about getting stranded when they go on a road trip because they can't go far enough with the battery life. And, you know, it's one thing if consumers want to go that direction, but when you try to force it, you run into problems, and we're just seeing that right now.
And what's even more sane about this, my little editorial 2 cents worth, is they're mandating all of these electric cars by the year 2030 something, but we don't have the capacity to fuel, for lack of better words, these electric vehicles right now. You're mandating something that we don't have nowhere the capacity to handle right now.
Yeah, it's insane. We don't have the grid to support it. That's for sure. That's for sure. Dr. Hedlund, we covered a lot of great topics here on a Friday afternoon. We want to thank you for all of your time. Folks, check out everything Aaron is discussing and prognosticating on at aaronhedlund.com, at Aaron_Hedlund on Twitter X, showmeinstitute.org. Thank you, Dr. Hedlund. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, sir.
You too.
All right, very good indeed. He's such a happy warrior, even when we're talking about horrific subjects. You know, but you know what, Chris? This too shall pass, And hopefully people will wake up and will make a different decision this fall.
Yeah, I guess you can't help but be happy when you're studying economics, which is going to be a very dry subject.
Mm-hmm. He makes it fun, though.
He does. I love having him on.
We covered a lot of territory with him. We've covered a lot of territory with all you all. 5:45 in the p.m. Producer Joey, you got any, maybe when we come back, any suggestions for the weekend? Are there any new movies out, or do we have to wait for Memorial Day weekend and all that kind of stuff?
There's a big Zendaya film that I haven't seen yet because we were out at Johnny's Hideout last night.
Okay.
Blame it on us.
But the TV show I've been really loving is Fallout, about the end of the world, so it could come true.
Let's ask about that. That sounds dystopian. We'll come back with that. We'll find out what's in the remainder of Chris's stack of stuff for the week, and we'll prepare you for Larry Connors USA. All that straight ahead as the Tim Jones Chris Harp Show rolls on a Friday here at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Provided them 68 pages of material, death threats, of actual incidents where people coming with guns to my event and, you know, trying to get into my green room with hidden weapons and fake IDs, fake federal ID, and then I think 4 break-ins at my house since I announced. You know, what I worry about is if there is an incident that, you know, bystanders will also, in almost all of the big assassination attempts, including my father's, there were 6 bystanders shot. My uncle, President Kennedy, had several bystanders shot. In all of these incidences, you get people who are caught in the crossfire. And, you know, it's important to have Secret Service protection to discourage those things from happening.
5:52 on Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show. Guys, I don't know about you, but if there is any presidential candidate that I guess you could consider RFK a major candidate, he's polling at 15%, that deserves Secret Service protection, I would think someone with the last name Kennedy should get that protection. And the fact that the Biden administration won't give him that protection is amazing to me. People are speculating, Tim, is that if he is given Secret Service protection, that will elevate RFK into a major candidate in the public's mind if he is giving Secret Service protection. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. You're right. The Biden administration doesn't want any attention, any additional attention drawn to RFK. They don't want him to be viewed by anyone as an actual legitimate contender. Well, RFK Jr. is getting certified on ballots all across the country. I heard he just made the Michigan ballot. That's a real problem for Biden, isn't it, Chris? Because there is a big anti-Biden vote in Michigan because of the Islamic community there. We saw that. I forget which member of the squad. Ilhan Omar from there? She's from Minnesota,
She's from Minnesota, yeah.
Presley, maybe?
Presley's from, I don't know where she's
at. One of them's from Michigan. And
I think that's, Tlaib's from Michigan.
Rashida Tlaib is from Michigan. And so they've got a Rashida Tlaib problem, the Biden administration does. They have a Muslim American problem there, and now they have an RFK Jr. Problem there. Joe Biden's gonna have a tough time winning Michigan when he's got all these people picking at his carcass on his side of the aisle.
Speaking of the Secret Service, Tim, Secret Service agent that was assigned to Kamala Harris was involved with a fight with other Secret Service agents. According to the Washington Examiner, the incident occurred at the Washington, D.C. area Andrews Air Force Base before Harris arrived and after the agent suffered what the Secret Service has characterized as a medical incident. The Washington Examiner understands that the agent became aggressive with other agents when the special agent in charge and a detailed shift supervisor attempted to calm the agent. A physical altercation ensues. So they get a little scrappy there in the Secret Service detail regarding Kamala, however you want to say her name. That's kind of upsetting to see the Secret Service, which is supposed to be protecting our leaders, scrapping with each other.
Mm-hmm. Where's she been, by the way? Have you seen her in the news at all recently?
I have not. She's been on a little abortion tour the last week or so.
So we have this little extracurricular story, but not much else about the current vice president. Maybe she's been having meetings with Gavin Newsom.
Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tim, Joey, it's Friday, and we're very lucky to have Joey as our executive producer. Plus, he is a professional movie critic as well. Joey, there's a TV show and a film that you want to recommend to our listeners for the weekend?
Yeah, I just finished Fallout. That's 8 episodes in Amazon.
Fallout.
Based on a video game that's been going since 1997.
Okay.
So it's fun to watch how it used to be just like a top-down, junky 8-bit thing, and now it's this open-world video game. And
Fallout.
Fallout. It's about a nuclear war that went off in 2077, and then there's these vaults that everyone lives in for 200 years, and then they start exploring the world and seeing, like, who set off the nukes.
How'd they stay alive for 200 years?
Well, the government. Vault Tech is the name of the company. Okay. But it's kind of controlled by the government. Mm-hmm. They provided them with these vaults, put everyone important in there, and then just see what happens. You know, people would farm down there. They'd watch movies in there.
Okay.
So it's incredible to think if the nuke were to go off today, would you make it into a vault? I don't know if they need radio people down there.
I don't know, but I would try to want to be. You know, I remember when I was in high school, we were reading the movie The Beach, and it was about radioactive fallout and everything. And that's when I learned that if there was a nuclear bomb, human beings would probably be annihilated, but cockroaches would probably survive us.
And the cockroaches in this show, Fallout, they're gigantic, and you gotta have the best guns to knock them out and kill them. Yeah.
All right.
There's mutants, there's ghouls, there's
girls or ghouls?
Ghouls?
Ghouls? They're girls?
Ghouls? No. The undead. They take a medicine to stay alive,
this
basically.
This thing's got everything.
Oh, yeah.
Fallout. That's on Prime?
That's on Amazon Prime. So check it out. It's 8 episodes. It's not that hard. And it's already been renewed for season 2.
Man, you could binge that in one night.
Of course.
Knock that out. You give it thumbs up.
I give it a thumbs up. Okay. And that's a big plot point, actually. If your thumb is as big as the mushroom cloud, you're dead already.
Well, what a great measure there. You have been listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. Larry Connors, USA, is up next. Larry's going to have on talking about... that's on a thing. Well, just keep listening. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk SDL. Drive safe. Have a great weekend.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.